Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit the webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Freemasonry and Antichrist upon us right after this. You know, in real estate transactions, we follow three basic rules. It's called location, location, and location. Well, in criminal law, we follow three rules also when we're talking to the police or a government agent, and that's don't say anything, keep your mouth shut, and shut up. Knowing what to say and when to say it, and what not to say, and who not to say it to, is summed up in this maxim of law, and that is all of the evidence that's ever going to be used against you is going to be furnished by you. And that's why judges, in their opinions, make short, terse statements like these. Listen to this first judge. He said, "Who would believe the ironic truth that the cooperative taxpayer fares much worse than the individual who relies upon his constitutional rights?" And he said that in United States versus Dickerson. Now, if I said something like that, I'd be accused of being a tax protester, wouldn't I? Now, listen to the second judge. He said, quote, "You can and you must keep your mouth shut for protection under the Fifth Amendment." And that judge said that in Belknap versus U.S. If I said something like that, I'd be accused of obstructing justice. Now listen to what this third judge has to say. He said, quote, "The constitutional privilege was intended to shield the guilty and the imprudent, as well as the innocent and far-sighted." And he said that in Marchetti versus United States. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. Now, that's a 4-hour commentary on the school and the law school, the Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, it's free. That's right, it's free of charge. We put these out in the public interest. That number again is 417-273-4967. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org, click onto the email and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? That's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about Freemasonry, the Antichrist upon us. I gave you quite a little story there about Martin Luther. Well, Martin Luther, you know, was a Protestant reformer. Well, Martin Luther, you know, he didn't have very much good to say about Jews in general, and especially about their leadership and their rabbis in particular. Now, he wasn't so much down on the average Joe Sixpack Jew, but he was sure down on the leadership of Judaism, and he was sure down on the Talmud. He called them Talmudic Jews. Today, of course, Luther and Luther's catechism have been banned from the Lutheran Church, the church that he founded, the church that he created. He's been kicked out of, and that's because of what we call the Judeo-Christian ethic. You see, today, it's unacceptable to say something disparaging about a Jew, or about Jews in general, or Judaism in particular. And that's because Judaism has a methodology. They've got a plan, and they're going to take over the world. And there's only 15 million of them. Now, when you're talking about a billion Muslims and they want to take over the world, you know, well, they've got a few guys that they can rely upon. But the Jews don't have that. They've only got 15 million. So they've got to have a different methodology and a different tactic than the Muslims. And their tactic is called infiltration and subversion. It is a marvelous plan. They call themselves smarter than the average goy, and they're not whistling Dixie through a straw hat. Those people are smart, and they are cunning. Well, that's because their father, Satan the devil, is smart, and he is cunning. I mean, you know, stop and think about it. You know, Satan's been around for 35 million years. He's a little smarter than the average Joe Sixpack sidling up to the bar down at the Ritz, you know. Satan is a very cunning, a very wise, very, very brilliant spirit being, and he controls Masonry. He controls Judaism. He controls Christianity. He controls Muslim theology and Buddhist. This is, so says the Bible, this is the Apostle Paul now, he says Satan is a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. This is Satan's world. God hasn't come down here to take over yet. So what you see going on down here is a part and bitten part and parcel with Bible prophecy. That's what the bottom line is. And the Jews now have a plan. They're going to take over the world, and that's why God wrote the book of Revelation. He's describing this end time period in which Judaism, at the helm, at the apex of the power struggle in the world, is guiding and directing it. You know, you Muslims out there, you're probably sitting there saying, you know, you dirty Yankees, you dirty Americans over there attacking us over here in Iraq. Let me tell you something. The average Joe Sixpack, you know, who's out here working on a construction job, doesn't give a rat's rectum about Iraq, about any of you Iraqis or that Iraqi oil. It's not important to him. And he's not particularly for or against the war. He's kind of ambivalent. Most Americans would not go to Iraq to steal your oil. But America is not owned and operated by the average Joe Sixpack American. You know, the United States of America has been taken over. That's right. A fifth column has come in here and taken over. Let me describe how this works. Out in Berkeley, California, some years back, this was back during the Vietnam War, there was a group of people, about 130 people, that had created a little group or organization that was anti-Vietnam War. And they meet, you know, once a week or something like that, and they'd put together little brochures, and they'd march and parade, and, you know, they just a bunch of kooks out here doing their thing. Well, one day the California Highway Patrol took notice of that, and they said, you know, we need to shut that group down. We need to shut their mouths. So the Highway Patrol sent a couple of agents into this group. Of course, they weren't wearing their Highway Patrol uniforms. They were wearing just plain uniforms and probably had long hair and an earring in their ear so that they'd look like the typical average hippie. They came up and they had some money. Now, this group, you know, is just made up of students on the campus and a bunch of malcontents and, you know, wage earners. You know, they don't have any great amount of money. There's no Rockefellers and DuPonts involved here. Just a grassroots anti-war movement. So these two highway patrolmen come in here, and they've got money. They've got taxpayer money. I mean, they got several thousand dollars of taxpayer money. And they've got an objective. Their job is to infiltrate this group and destroy it from within. They succeeded. They did. And here's the way they did it. So they got into the group. In fact, they got into leadership positions because they offered $5,000. They said, well, let me donate my life savings, this one cop says. And they donated $5,000. God buys a lot of leaflets and brochures. And so the people there said, well, we're going to vote you in as our treasurer. And so now he's an officer. The other one did the same thing. He became the secretary or the vice president or something of the group. So with their money, remember what the Jews in the protocol said? With our money, we will buy the disposition of those that we seek to control. And that's, you don't have to be a Jew to do this. Hell, you can be a Protestant and infiltrate a Catholic church, or you can be a Catholic and infiltrate a Protestant church. You can infiltrate anything. That's what the communists have done with the green movement. You know, you got this environmental movement, and a lot of good people out there said, you know, I think cutting redwood trees down is a bad policy. We want to change that. And so you get these good people out here. They're kind of naive. They're not really experienced people. And then along comes somebody that's pretty sophisticated. He just comes out here and takes over. Goes on in the business world all the time. These are called hostile takeovers. When you have a company taking over another company, it's a hostile takeover. It's infiltration, subversion, and you use money to do it, and you destroy it from within, not from without. America isn't being destroyed from without. It's not the Russians. It's not the Chinese. It's not our enemies that are destroying us. We're destroying ourselves through subversion. So pretty soon, the two highway cops are now in leadership positions in this little group, and so they start some invective rhetoric, and they come up with some neat ideas, and they say, "Look, you know, look, if we want to get our message out here, we have to do something that's going to get headlines. We got to do something dramatic." You know, of course, the average guy in there, he's saying, "Well, no, we don't want to do something illegal or unlawful. We got to work within the system." And the cops say, "Well, you know, be that as it may." And they propose that they go out and buy some dynamite and set off a bomb on the mud flats on the other side of the Nimitz Freeway. See, so Berkeley is situated on the east side of San Francisco Bay, and there's a big mud flat out there. And in these days, you know, today there's a lot of building going on out there on the mud flats. But in those days, there was just nothing there. It was just mud flats. So they went out there on the mudflats and they set off this dynamite bomb. Didn't hurt anybody. And of course, it made the newspapers, you know, and it got headlines. They could kind of figure out that this was anti-war. Now, there wasn't anything to tie this one particular group in. And none of these people are really militants. What they did was the group turned them down, but they found a couple of guys in there, just two members of the group that said, "Yeah, hey, that's a good idea." Couple of dullards, you know. And so these dullards go out and buy the dynamite. Now, all this dynamite, all of this, these explosives and stuff are sitting in these two guys' garage. And of course, these two guys are members of this anti-war group. One day, mysteriously, nobody can figure out how the police ever figured out where all of these explosives are, but through some anonymous tip, the cops come down with one of these SWAT team raids and catch these two guys with all of these explosives in their garage, which only the two highway patrolmen and these two guys even know about. The rest of the members of the group, they don't know jack squat. Now, they take these two guys in and they question them, and not these two cops. These are the undercover cops. I mean, the real cops, you know, they're out there. And these two guys say, "Well, I'm a member of the anti-war group, the Berkeley anti-war group." And then they start naming names of all the people that are involved in this group. And so now the cops come out and start arresting these people and locking them up for being a part of a conspiracy. Conspirators. Violent people they are. See how this program works? Well, naturally, with all the prosecutions that went with it, and some of them went to jail, and some of them didn't. What happened to the two cops? Well, they just kind of disappear into the woodwork. I mean, after all, these two cops don't even have to testify. They broke into these guys' house. They found the explosives. And these guys opened their mouths and started naming names, and they were identifying other people that belonged to the same group. It wasn't that the other 128 members were violent. It wasn't that these two guys were violent. It was that they were led into it. Now, we call that entrapment, and that would be an affirmative defense. But these two cops just disappeared. Nobody knows what happened to them. They got reassigned, you know, down to Rio Linda or someplace. They're out on the beat or doing something. Now, they destroyed this anti-war group. Now, that was orchestrated by our FBI. J. Edgar Hoover orchestrated that. And it was written up and, you know, published in books. And most people don't read that kind of thing. But the Jews, that's a page right out of the Jews' journal. That's the way they do that. Communism, the Republican Party, the Democratic Party. Everything in America that means anything is infiltrated, and it's guided and directed by this Jewish conspiracy. That's why I started off with the conspiracy, you know, on program one, and then I branched out, and I said, okay, let's take a look at the next step, and the next step, and the next step. And so I thought I'd share this book with you. It's called Freemasonry, Antichrist Upon Us. The two groups that are calling themselves, that identify themselves plainly as Antichrist, are the Jewish religion. They're absolutely opposed to Christ, and they don't make any bones about it. They just tell you plainly. And then the Freemasons. Now, the Freemasons are in control of the political establishment in the United States. For instance, in my county, right here, this is Ozark County, Missouri, every public office holder in this county is a Mason. You cannot get the nomination, Republican or Democratic, in this county without being a Mason. That's just where reality's at. Furthermore, President Bush is a Mason. He's a member of Skull and Bones. It's a Masonic offshoot. In fact, it's superior to the Masons. Skull and Bones is. And in back of these groups are these Jewish organizations. And the Jews are pretty close-knit people. See, they use their religion as the basis of the entire infrastructure of their organization. That's what the Muslims are doing, see? The Muslims over there are blowing themselves up. They use their religion as the basic building block of their infrastructure. We Americans over here, we don't think like that at all. You know, we don't, our mindset. I know when they ran those airplanes into those two buildings there in New York City, I was absolutely amazed. It had never crossed my mind that somebody might do such a thing. I couldn't even imagine such a thing until I actually saw it. You know, I said, that's unbelievable. You mean those people would crash? They would commit suicide to do that? You know, the only time I'd ever heard of anything like that was with the Japanese kamikazes. Remember that in World War II? The Japanese did that. A desperation tactic. Well, hey, there's other guys out there that do the same thing. Well, the Lutheran Church has been infiltrated by Jewish fifth columnists. In fact, they have infiltrated the seminaries of America. That is, the teaching and the training of America's preachers is controlled. The curriculum. You know, all of the churches of America, not everyone, you know, you can't persuade everyone. There's always going to be a few guys that you can't infiltrate. But by and large, I mean, 99% of the churches of America are 501c3 tax-exempt churches. That's why they don't have any capacity left. The churches of America, unlike the churches during the Revolutionary War, you know, you can't go out here and tell people the truth. You can't go out here and preach this. If a preacher got up in the pulpit in America today and told you the story from the pulpit that I'm telling you over the air, he would be out of that church in less than a month. I don't think he could make it to the next Sabbath. But I'll guarantee you he wouldn't be there for 30 days. And the same thing is true. We have in our government, the same thing is true. For instance, the FDA and this Vioxx, you know, every once in a while there's a whistleblower. He comes up and he blows the whistle. Every whistleblower is hounded to death. I mean, just hounded to death. And not because the whistleblower is wicked, bad, or evil. It's because the administration has the power over this guy and they're going to hound him to death. The pharmaceuticals have infiltrated the FDA. The FDA is nothing more than an agent, an adjunct of the pharmaceutical industry. Same thing with the Department of Agriculture. It's just an extension of Tyson and ADM. They make their own policy. And they make their policy in favor of themselves and opposed to anybody else that might be a competitor. I mean, after all, you can't blame the Jews. I mean, there's only 15 million of them, and they can't come out here and stand up toe-to-toe with all the Christians. They can't stand up toe-to-toe with a billion Muslims, but they can infiltrate them, and they can guide and direct them, and they can destroy them from within, just like a Trojan horse. That's been their tactic for 2,500 years, and it works like a shot. Well, they're in control of the world, and it's going to get worse from here. From here, it gets even worse. And as old Dan Rather said the other day, you know, talking about that tsunami, he said, you know, this is something of biblical proportions. Now, I told you that Jesus didn't have any good words for these guys. Well, in Matthew chapter 23, The whole chapter deals with these Jews. Actually, not with Jews, you know, the average carpenter, plumber, and electrician. What he's talking about here are the rabbis. He's talking about the leaders, the infiltrators, the guys that have rejected God. Listen to this. He says, "Then spake Jesus to the multitude and to his disciples." He's out here talking to people in Judah. These are Jews. You might as well go to New York City, you know, and stand up on his soapbox and say, okay, I mean, New York City has got 5 million Jews in there. So he's talking to people that go to Sabbath synagogue every Saturday, the rank and file. And most of these people thought he was a pretty good guy. They liked him. Many of them followed him. They converted, you know, from Judaism over to this new theology, the theology of the Messiah. Now, can you imagine how popular the Messiah must have been? Can you imagine a Baptist preacher coming into a Jewish synagogue and converting these Jews over to Baptist theology? Can you imagine how popular he's going to be among the rabbis and the leaders of the church? Picture it this way. Can you imagine how popular would a Lutheran be if he came into a Catholic church and started converting a bunch of Catholics, or the Catholics come into a Methodist church and start converting? You know, that's why all these churches are telling you that if you don't belong to the right church, you're going to go to hell. They jealously guard their members. Those members provide them with their livelihoods. That's where the money comes from. As old Dan used to say, you know, follow the money. You know, let's wake up and smell the roses. So here's the Messiah, and he's talking, and he says, "The scribes and the Pharisees sit in the seat of Moses. All therefore whatsoever they bid you observe, that observe and do. But do not you after their works, for they say and they do not." Yeah, the Jews to this day, see, they pick up the Torah and they say, follow us. You know, we sit in the seat of Moses and we follow the Passover. And Jesus told them, he said, yeah, that's right. You know, you should be practicing the Passover and the days of unleavened bread and the Feast of Tabernacles and the Sabbath day, all you Christians out there. But he said, don't do after their works. And that's because they follow the traditions of their fathers, the traditions of the elders. And he said, they're wicked and they're evil. Listen to this. "For they bind heavy burdens and grievous to be borne, and they lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves will not move them with one of their little fingers. But all of their works that they do for to be seen of men, they make broad their phylacteries, and they enlarge the borders of their garments. They go out and they preach a good story, but that's not what they practice. They preach a good story, but then they don't practice it. And love the uppermost rooms at feasts and the chief seats in the synagogues. They go to all the big parties in Washington. And they sit on the boards of directors of big corporations. And they operate. They are the secretaries of the various government offices. And they direct officialdom. That's infiltration. And greetings in the markets. And to be called of men, Rabbi, Rabbi. And Jesus said, be not called Rabbi. For one is your master, even Christ, and all you are brethren. So the next time you hear somebody run around, Rabbi, Rabbi, Jesus said, don't call any man Rabbi. Got that? Don't get mad at me now and send me an email and tell me now that I'm anti-Jewish. I'm just reporting what's reported here in Matthew 23, verse 8. Now, if you want to go out and call some guy rabbi, get after it. Don't let me get in your way, but just bear in mind that Jesus told you not to do that. And all I'm doing is, I'm a reporter. I'm just reporting what Jesus told you. You didn't hear that from your local preacher because he can't tell you this. If he told you this, he'd get fired. He'd lose his job. He'd lose his seniority. He's going to tell you what you want to hear. He's going to tell you what the fifth column tells him to tell you. That's the bottom line to that story. He says, "But be you not called rabbi, for one is your master, even Christ, and all of you are brethren. And call no man your father upon earth, for one is your father, which is in heaven." You ever run around these churches today? Oh, I did you hear what Father Blankenship said? Catholics do that. They call their preachers father. Probably a few other religious guys do that too, but you're not to use the word father for anybody other than your father in heaven. Told you that over in Matthew 7, you know, or 5 or 6, you know, in the Beatitudes, he says, you know, when you pray our Father which art in heaven. Your father is not the local priest down here at the local Catholic church. Who said that? Jesus said that, not George Gordon. I didn't think of that. I'm not that smart. Verse 10, he said, "Neither be you called masters, for one is your master, even Christ." You know, back in slave times, you know, you had to come up and call your owner master. Yes, a massa. Yes, a massa. God told you not to use that term, master. There's only one master out here now, and that was Jesus. Not to call anybody else father. That's God the Father. Not to call anybody rabbi. That applies to Jews and Christians and Muslims and anybody else. Verse 11, he says, "But he that is greatest among you shall be your servant. Whosoever shall exalt himself shall be abased, and he that shall humble himself shall be exalted." Now listen to this. He says, "But woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites! For you shut up the kingdom of heaven against men, for you neither go in yourselves, and neither suffer you them that are entering to go in." Can you see why they crucified the Messiah? He called them vipers. He called them hypocrites. He called them everything but a white man, for crying out loud. That's why I said to you last program, I said, can you show me any place in the Bible where Jesus Christ, the Messiah, had a good word for a Jew? Martin Luther didn't have any. Well, he wasn't opposed to the average Joe Sixpack Jew. In fact, he was out there preaching to him, trying to get him to repent. He said, you know, you guys need to quit this lying, stealing, and theft. The bottom line to this is that you and I, and Jews and everybody else, have a specific duty. And that duty is to obey God and keep His commandments. Calling yourself a Jew is a political title. Calling yourself a Muslim or a Buddhist or Catholic, Protestant, or Jew, what you're doing here is you're hanging a political label on yourself. Now, do you think for a minute that a Mormon isn't bound by the law that says you shall do no murder? You think that Jews have a right to go out and murder people? Do you think that Catholics have a right to go out and kill people? And yet, you know, all of these religious groups will go out and kill some other member of another religious group. You got Jews killing Muslims and Muslims killing Jews. Look at the Christians up in North Ireland. They're up there killing each other, you know, just like, and they're doing it in the name of religion, aren't they? I'm telling you, you know, these religious guys are dangerous. Religious people are killers. Religious people are criminals. Just take a look around the world. He goes on to say, "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites, for you devour widows' houses, and for a pretense you make long prayers." Here are people stealing widows' houses and then praying to God. Now, how in the hell does that work? How do you go out here and pray, "Oh God, I just love you so much," and then you go out here and you oppress widows and orphans and steal their houses? And he said, "Therefore you shall receive the greater damnation. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites, for you compass sea and land to make one proselyte, one convert. And when he's made, you make him twofold more the child of hell than yourselves." You go out here and you convert people to your theology and your religion, and then you make them the child of the devil. "Woe unto you, you blind guides, which say, whosoever shall swear by the temple, it is nothing, but whosoever shall swear by the gold of the temple, he is a debtor. You fools, you blind, for whether is greater, the gold or the temple that sanctifies the gold? And whosoever shall swear by the altar, it is nothing, but whosoever swears by the gift that's upon it, he is guilty." He says, you fools and you blind. Who's he talking to here? He's talking to the religious leaders of his day, the rabbis that we call them today, the Catholic priests. He's talking to the religious leaders. Now can you see why they strung him up on a cross and killed him? He came in there and told them where the bear does it and where the rubber meets the road. And he didn't mince any words about it either. And by the way, Martin Luther died when he was 63 years old. And remember that last story I told you? That was his last sermon. Last sermon. Remember that anti-rabbinical sermon that he gave? Hey, listen, you got to be careful, you know, who you're talking about over here. And the political establishment and the religious establishment in America, they know not only what side of their bread the butter is on, they know how to shut up, because if they open their mouths, they know they're liable to end up dead. And that's why Dan Rather doesn't come on the CBS Evening News and tell you here's where the rubber meets the road, boys and girls, because if he did, he'd be out of a job, period. And that's the end of that argument. He goes on to say here, you fools and blind, for whether is greater the gift or the altar that sanctifies it? Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites, for you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin, and you've omitted the weightier matters of the law, judgment, mercy, and faith. These ought you to have done, and have not left the other undone. He said, you blind guides, which strain at a gnat and swallow a camel, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites, you make clean the outside of the cup and the platter, but within, they're full of extortion and excess. You blind Pharisees, you blind rabbis, cleanse first that which is within the cup and platter, that the outside of them may be clean also. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You're like unto whited sepulchres, which indeed appear beautiful, but are within full of dead men's bones and of all uncleanness. Even so, ye also outwardly appear righteous to men, but within you're full of hypocrisy and iniquity. You know, these guys, you know, they talk a good story. They look good. You know, you got all these people out here today, they're just out and rounding up money here and running over here to the Indian Ocean and Thailand and Sri Lanka. And hey, we just want to help you poor people over here. Yeah, you know, they put on a good show for you. And then listen to what Jesus had to say. In Matthew 7:21, he said, not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. And many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name, and in your name have cast out devils, and in your name have done many wonderful works? My God, didn't we feed the poor and the little children over in Sumatra and Thailand and Sri Lanka? After the great tsunami, didn't we do all these good works? And Jesus said in verse 23, he said, then will I profess unto them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you that work iniquity. Iniquity, lawlessness, criminal behavior. That's why I keep telling you, the secret to this is obey God and keep his commandments. Now, that's not to say that every Jew doesn't obey God and keep his commandments. I'm sure there's a lot of Jews out there, just like old Elijah, you know, that he complained one time to Big Mike. He said, hey, I'm the last guy in Israel here to be practicing the law. And Big Mike said, oh, no, there's 7,000 just like Elijah that haven't bowed their knee to Baal. Now, there's a few scattered people out here that haven't bowed their knee to Baal, or if they did, they quit. It's what's called repentance, you know. Now, if you'd like to get a copy of this book, I'm not sure that you can get it anymore. It's Freemasonry, Antichrist Upon Us. I'm going to give you the name and number here. I want to give credit to where credit's due. It's put out by the, distributed by the Missionary Service and Supply, Route 2, Columbiana, Ohio, 44408. Let me give you that again. Missionary Service and Supply, Route 2, Columbiana, Ohio, 44408. The telephone number is 216-457-7641. Again, that's 216-457-7641. Now, this is written by a guy named Glenn Berry. And I guess while I'm at it, I ought to give you a little disclaimer here, in case somebody gets mad You want to remember that the opinions, the beliefs, the comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. And they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or the staff of the network or of this radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to my website. That's georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school. 417-273-4967. Now that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. And gosh, while I'm at it, I might as well tell you that, let's take a group here like the Missionary Service and Supply. Now, I think the guy wrote a pretty good book here, and I'm going to share it with you. I think this guy hit the nail pretty much on the head, and so I'm sharing that with you. This is a report, by the way. I didn't write this book. I'm not smart enough to do that, and so I'm just here to report it. The guy that wrote the book is a guy named Glenn Berry. Never met the guy, don't know him from Adam. I don't have anything to do with the Missionary Service and Supply Company out at Route 2, Columbiana, Ohio. Now, that's spelled C-O-L-U-M-B-I-A-N-A. I have never heard. I've heard of Columbus, Ohio, Columbiana. I haven't got a clue as to where that's at. It's an odd name to me. Columbiana, Ohio. It's got to be right because it's stamped on here. It's printed. 44408. Now, these people, you know, if they heard this program and their book being used on this program, you know, they might puke. They might just come unhinged and say, "Why, we don't approve of that guy Gordon. He's a dirty, low-down, right-wing reactionary fanatic." So let me give you another disclaimer. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events from the scriptural perspective 7 days a week. The sources of information that we use on this program are believed to be true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to the authors and the publications used on this program, and often endorses and recommends books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. And that's why I'm recommending this book to you. But the endorsements or recommendations that we give does not necessarily mean that the authors or publishers of these publications that we recommend or endorse are going to reciprocate. So I don't know if these people at the Missionary Supply are going to say, "Hey, that Gordon's a good guy," or they're going to say, "That guy Gordon is a dork. Don't listen to him." And that's because most of the authors and the publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, or they're religious, or they're economic or sectarian. They may be racial or ethnic partisans who may not necessarily endorse the opinions or beliefs expressed here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. That's all. They may or may not agree with me. So don't get mad now at the sponsors and say, "Well, this radio station or this sponsor over here is a dirty, no good lowdown like that George Gordon." Just bear in mind that I'm exercising free speech here. I pay for my time and come on the air and I say, "Okay, now let me pass this on to you," and then you can take it and do whatever you want with it. Now, it is at once obvious that the word Jew is used to speak of those people whose God is the devil. Then, on the other hand, the same word Jew may be used as a reversal and an opposite, where it speaks of those people, Jews, God is Jesus Christ. Now, the first group, which we have discussed, are not Jews. They just call themselves Jews. That's why the scripture says there are those people that call themselves Jews and are not, but do lie. Now, I've mentioned this to you in the past. You know, the word heaven, when you look that up in the Bible and code plead it out, has three meanings. The word hell, when you look it up in the Bible, has three different definitions, three different original root words. The word Jew does the same thing. It refers to good guys and bad guys, and it's up to you, because remember, this thing is written in code so that you'll stumble, fall backward, be broken, ensnared, and taken. That's what Isaiah told you in Isaiah 28, verses 9 through 13. It's what Jesus told you in Matthew chapter 13. He said, "Now pay attention, boys and girls. I ain't talking to these people now in parables because I want them to hear and understand. I'm speaking to them in parables so they won't understand." And that's why this word Jew is so commonly misunderstood. And then, of course, you got the fifth column over here calling themselves Jews and calling themselves the people of God, see? The chosen people. And so, if nobody's ever pointed this out to you, you know, you probably took the bait, just like a fish, you know. You don't throw the hook in the water and say, hey, fish, come over here and grab this hook so I can hook you and take you home and eat you. What you do is you take the hook and you put a bug on it. And you camouflage the hook so that when the fish comes over, he thinks he's eating a bug. He grabs the bug, tastes pretty good, and inside that bug is this dirty fifth column hook, a number 8, which grabs him. That's why God warned you in the Bible, you know, watch out for these wolves in sheep's clothing. They talk a good talk, but they don't walk the walk. Now, I told you 5 times in the scripture how to identify Antichrist. Didn't he? 5 times. I told you that. It's in 1 John 2, verses 18 through 22. 1 John 4, verse 3. 2 John 1, verse 7. 5 times. And it's the Jews and the Masons that fill the bill. You'll know them by their fruits, he said. Pay attention. Now, the first group, which we've discussed, are not Jews. They just call themselves Jews. That means they're liars. And this is what Paul calls them in Titus chapter 1. He calls them liars. L-I-A-R-S. Liars. Not people that are mistaken. Not people that made a mistake and we think we're right. He said they're liars. In Revelation 2:9, they're called the synagogue of Satan. They're not Jews. They do lie. They're not God's people. They are the devil's people. They're not Jews, they're Talmudists. And they follow after the Talmud, which is the traditions, which Christ condemned so violently in Matthew chapter 15. And it's by these traditions that Christ denounced. Talmudic traditions, Jesus said, that they have made the word of God of no effect. And these traditions are the opposite of God. They are of the devil. Now, everything that God condemns in the Old Testament is made moral in the devil's religion, the traditions of men laid down in the Babylonian Talmud. God condemns incest. God condemns sodomy. God condemns adultery. God condemns cheating. God condemns lying, stealing, and murdering in the scriptures. But in the devil's religion, as laid down in the Talmud, all of these things are made moral. Holy, righteous, just, and good in the Talmud. Now, there's a difference here, boys and girls. And the difference is so great that it is the difference of complete opposite and complete reversal. Now, they've got you calling yourself, well, I'm a member of the Judeo-Christian ethic. That's true. Christians today are marrying sodomites in their churches. That's Talmudic. That doesn't come from the Bible. You didn't get that from Moses. You got that from the Antichrist. The opposite. Now, I'm not getting mad at all you queers out there. I mean, you know, if you want to practice a little butt fun, well, it's your business in life, I guess. Of course, there's a hook, you know, in that bug. Always remember, the bug looks good, but there's a big number 8 sticking in there. And it's going to hook you. It's going to gaff you. Now, when you see or hear the word Jew, therefore, you must ask, well, what does this word Jew mean? How is it being used? Does it refer to the devil's religion or to God's religion? Or does it refer to a nation? In Romans 10, verse 12, we read, for there is no difference between the Jew and the Greek. In this instance, the word Jew does not have reference to either the religion of the devil, on the one hand, or to the religion of God, on the other hand. What does it mean, then? It can only have here a national connotation. It's the distinction between the Jews and the Greeks, just like we have distinctions between the Greeks and the Italians, or the Italians and the French, or the French and the Danes. It's a national connotation. So using the word Jew isn't a dirty word any more than using the word Greek is a dirty word. Or using the word black, or Negro, or African. Or, of course, then it gets to be a little bit tricky because I was over in Hawaii not too long ago, and guy said, you know, you're one of them damn Howleys. And I said, come again? And he said, Howley. He's a big Hawaiian over there. He must have been about, you know, 6'19", weighed about 300 pounds. Guy could have ate me for lunch and never burped once. But I said, oh, yes, sir. You know, I just saluted smartly, and I could see that guy didn't like white people very well. Of course, I was kind of naive. You know, when I first got over to Hawaii, I was thinking Waikiki and beaches and hotels. I didn't know anything about how we went over there and stole Hawaii from the Hawaiians. You know, I used to be a pretty naive kind of guy, just normal run-of-the-mill, everyday garden variety, Nixon, silent majority, you know. Got over there and found out, you know, what those Hawaiians really think of us, and I said, oh. Then I found out, went over and stole their ground from them. Hey, listen, I just want you Hawaiians to know that the average Joe Sixpack American, we don't even know that we went over there and stole your ground. Here we are, Americans, going to public school in California, Washington, Oregon, New York, and Maine and Florida. We haven't got a clue as to what happened to you people over in Hawaii. The average American hasn't got a clue as to where Hawaii even came from. We're taught that it just kind of boiled up out of the ocean from a big volcano. And that's about all we know about it. And we don't think about it, you know. We just say, well, gee, I wish I could go over there to Hawaii. I think if every American knew and understood how we stole Hawaii from the Hawaiians, I think we'd be repulsed by it. But, you know, we're not, because we don't know. We don't care. That's another story for another day. But, you know, I think if the average American just paid attention to what he's reading in U.S. News and World Report, I mean, just think about it for a second. Iraq just happens to have 25% of the known oil reserves in the world. 25%! And we just happen to be over there trying to bring democracy to the Iraqis under the guise of we're looking for weapons of mass destruction, which never existed, weren't there. And then we switched over and said, well, you Iraqis are a whole lot better off because we got rid of Saddam Hussein. Now listen to the Lehrer News Hour and pay attention. Every once in a while they'll interview an Iraqi and he'll say, you know, you Americans suck. Under Saddam Hussein, he might have been a brutal dictator, but we had security and we could leave our houses and go to work, and today we can't. Led me to the conclusion that those Iraqis are so violent that they have to have a brutal dictator like Saddam Hussein to keep them in line. And then George Bush says, well, let's go over there and teach these guys democracy. These guys have never voted in their lives. They don't know what democracy is. And we're going to go over there and spread democracy. I mean, hell, you might as well go to Italy and say, let's spread Baptist theology over here in the Vatican. I mean, you got your heads up your rectal regions, for crying out loud. You're not going over there and do diddly squat. Those people have their own minds made up. And furthermore, what duty do we have to go over there and protect those fools from themselves? Why do we even care? Well, because they got 25% of the world's oil. That's why. Told you that before. We don't give a rat's rectum about those Iraqis. You're kidding yourself if you think we do. George Bush comes out, oh, we want freedom and we want peace. And you know, Jeremiah made an observation one time. God told us, he says, well, when they're crying peace, peace, and there is no peace, you'll know that war is right at the door. That's what I'm always watching for. I listen to these politicians. They're talking about peace, 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 when there is no peace. All we get out of these guys is more war. I wish some guy'd come up there and say, what we need is more war. That's the guy I want to vote for. He probably couldn't produce war. He'd probably produce peace, because if he's as incompetent as these politicians that are preaching peace, then you'd have peace come out of the war candidate, because you can't get any peace out of the peace candidates, can you? Well, how significant is it that in our time such a simple understanding is not at all general in Christendom? It's even considered in some quarters that these people, who are of the religion of the devil, who are called Jews, Antichrist, that they are God's people. Whereas Christians, who are the true Jews, in Romans 2:29 and 1 Peter 2:9, are left out of the picture completely, as though they were the devil's people. Well, that's that fifth column, you know. They've persuaded you Christians out there that you're a part of the Judeo-Christian ethic. And you are. You have been converted to Talmudic Jewish tradition. And of course, they see these crimes, these criminal activities like incest, sodomy, adultery, cheating, lying, stealing, and murdering to be good. The Bible condemns them as being filth and perversion, and Christians accept it. Now listen, you Christians are over here in Iraq. You've killed 100,000 of these Iraqis. 100,000 in the process of stealing their oil. You're over there murdering these Iraqis in the name of democracy, for crying out loud. Don't you think it's time we woke up and said, hey, wait a minute. If you're trying to bring peace to the world, do you go over here and attack these people and bring them war and kill 100,000 of them and say, what we want is peace? Have we taken leave of our senses? Have we gone totally stark, raving mad? Kind of reminds me of old George Orwell, you know, in his book, 1984. We call war peace and peace war. We call up down and down up. We got everything backwards, and we think it's normal. Here we are out here in our churches marrying queers, for crying out loud, and we think sodomy is good. It's what we've been taught all of our lives. We're taught that Jesus loves queers. No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't. The definition of love is given in the Scripture, remember? For this is the love of God, that we keep His commandments. One of the commandments says, sodomites are to be put to death. You're not to have a sodomite of the sons of Israel. That's what we're instructed. If we loved God, we'd obey His commandments and keep His commandments. We hate our God. We despise Him. And when He ruled over us, we gave Him the finger, and we told Him to get the hell out of our lives, that what we wanted was a king, like all the nations around us. Go read it for yourself. It's in 1 Samuel chapter 8, 22 verses. But in verse 18, he gave us a warning. He said, you know, the day will come when you'll cry out to me because of your king that you've set over you. And when you do, I won't hear you. So you can forget about praying to Jesus now to bail your chestnuts out of the fire, because He's already told you, I ain't hearing that crap. I ain't listening. As my old granny used to say, you made your bed, sweetheart. Now go sleep in it. And that's where we're at in Iraq. Now watch this Iraq war. The Afghanistan war worked out pretty well. They attacked us. We defended. The Iraqis didn't attack us. We just used terrorism as the excuse to go over and attack them so that we could steal their oil. And they're a little ticked off about that. And you got something else working against you. We've got our own God working against us. We had our own God working against us in Vietnam. There's nothing worse than to get crosswise with the statute in Exodus 23:20. Let's go take a look at that. It says, I'll be an enemy to your enemies and an adversary to your adversaries. But if you don't obey my voice and keep my commandments, then I'll turn that against you. And I'm just betting that God's going to turn that against us in Iraq. Now, the Christians are God's people and true Jews. Well, there's a little bit of truth to that, but there's less truth to it than you'd want to imagine. At least it is a little better. The Talmudists, who called themselves Jews, are the devil's people. Now, of course, all Christians see themselves as being God's people. You know, the Mormons, you know, they say, well, I'm one of God's people. And the Catholics, well, I'm one of God's people. And the Methodists and the Baptists and Protestants, well, naturally, the Jews and the Buddhists and Muslims, everybody, you know, they see themselves as God's people. They want to be, you know, kissing cousins to God Almighty Himself. They don't want to obey God. They don't want to keep His commandments. They don't want to do a damn thing that they're told. But they want to be God's chosen people. And no doubt there are some of them out there. Now, I'm just a little bit skeptical as to whether it's the Christians in general. This guy, you know, he's using the term, the Christians are God's people. Well, there are some Christians out there that I'm sure are God's people. But in general, I don't believe that for a minute. Now, the Talmudists, who call themselves Jews, are the devil's people. And this is what Jesus meant when he said to them, "You are of your father the devil." The opposite is what Paul meant when he said to the Christians, "You are all the children of God by faith in Christ Jesus." Galatians 3:26. And this is what Peter meant when he said to Christians, "You are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should show forth the praises of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light," in 1 Peter 2, verse 9. Now one becomes a Jew, so-called, by subscribing to the Talmud and following the rabbinical teachings of the Pharisees. People have been becoming Jews for centuries. You'll see that in Esther 8:17, where it says, "Many of the people of the land became Jews." They converted over. The pagans were converting over to Judaism. Mrs. Dilling has stated, "The Jewish religion is sheer Phariseeism, and its sole authority is the tradition of the Pharisees, which Christ said made the commandments of God of no effect in Matthew 15, and was of the devil. This was committed to writing at Sura, Babylonian 500 AD, as the 63-volume set of the Babylonian Talmud." The Universal Jewish Encyclopedia, 1943, under Pharisee, states, "The Jewish religion, as it is today, traces its descent without a break through all of the centuries from the Pharisees. The Talmud is the largest and most important single member of that literature, and the study of it is essential for any real understanding of Phariseeism." Now, see, the fifth column came in, and they got a hold of your preacher, and they taught him, "Now, we're going to blend in here. We're going to call this the Judeo-Christian ethic." And so we bought into that. You know, most Americans, most Christians have bought into this Judeo-Christian ethic. And they have sold us sodomy. Sold us sodomy, lock, stock, and barrel. Well, okay, boys and girls, if you want to play sodomy, get after it. Don't let me get in your way. But I think that we'd be better served if we got down to the basics, whether you're a basic Christian or you're a basic Muslim or you're a basic something else. Obey God and keep His commandments. Obey God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. Well, that's what Solomon wrote in Ecclesiastes. He said, this is the whole duty of man, that you obey God and keep His commandments. Yeah, I'm about out of time again. You know, we're just starting to have some fun. And all of a sudden, the clock says, hey, you're out of time. So that being the case, we'll wrap it up here tonight, and we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. Keep in mind that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States and indeed around the world over the Internet. For more information about The Law Hour and the Gordon Law School, please go to the website at georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, biblical law, and we do it all from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page at the website, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Well, there's the signal. Says time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.